Welcome to the Florida Roundup. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. My co-host Tom Hudson is out this week. And this week marks 3 years since the mass shooting at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando. 49 people were killed in that tragedy. 58 others were injured. At the time, it was the deadliest shooting in American history. The Pulse tragedy remains this country's deadliest act of violence against LGBTQ people. Now, Florida lawmakers want to designate the nightclub site as a national memorial. Congressional Representatives Stephanie Murphy and Darren Soto, both of Central Florida, announced those plans earlier this week. I spoke with Congressman Soto about the proposal. Take a listen. Congressman Darren Soto, a pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
Tell me a little bit more about the measure you and your colleague in Central Florida, Stephanie Murphy, have put forth, calling for the site of the Pulse nightclub to become a national memorial. Tell me about your vision for that.
Absolutely. Congresswoman Demings, Congresswoman Murphy, and I all put out a new bill to make the Pulse nightclub site a national memorial. Just this week, we had the 30-year remembrance, a absolute catastrophic tragedy in the Orlando area. All three of us lost constituents at that time, and a major attack on both the LGBTQ and Hispanic communities. And so we want to make sure that this area is protected, that we never forget this tragedy and the lessons we learned from it, as well as the fact that our community came together to heal, like such a horrific act having occurred. And having a national memorial not only provides the federal recognition to assist with grants and to recognize how important a site this is and how important it is to remember, but it also helps protect it. We've seen other LGBT landmarks be eliminated, with Matthew Shepard, the shrine that formed in Wyoming. So it's absolutely critical that we protect these landmarks.
This would require federal funding. Can you share with me the process? You've introduced H.R. 3094. This is a bill that would request federal funds to create the Pulse Memorial. Uphill battle in the House, Senate? What's the prospect for passage?
So it's just a recognition in a federal designation. There aren't going to be many federal funds utilized in this. The site will actually be locally operated by local funds and by grants. So I don't anticipate there being a high fiscal cost to this, since it's simply a federal memorial designation, but will be managed on the local level by the One Pulse Foundation. It looks very good in the House. We have bipartisan support from obviously the various members from Central Florida, and we just had Congressman Vern Buchanan, a Republican, sign on, along with several members from South Florida, and we've had some Republican members from throughout the state looking into it to sign on as well. We just started asking for co-sponsors the other day, so we're proud for it to be bipartisan, and we're certainly reaching out to Senator Rubio's office to see about him potentially leading the effort in the Senate. We could all recognize how important it is to remember such a tragedy, much like the tragedy that happened in Parkland. And I know even in the Jacksonville area, you all had a major shooting, two actually in a row. So all of our communities have faced these types of situations that just cry out for making sure that we never forget.
Congressman Darren Soto, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And how do you think the victims and survivors of the Pulse shooting should be honored? Give us a call from wherever you are in the state. Here on the Florida Roundup, the number is 305-995-1800. Tweets to @FloridaRoundup. We'll get to all of your comments in a moment. But first, Brandon Wolf was at the Pulse nightclub the night of June 12, 2016. He is now an LGBTQ advocate with Equality Florida, and he joins us from WMFE in Orlando. Brandon, thanks for being with us. And it's my understanding you lost friends the night of the Pulse tragedy. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. First of all, thank you for having me on, and I really appreciate that we're continuing to have a conversation about how we can honor the victims, the survivors, the family members from Pulse. I went that night with two of my very best friends. I would call them my chosen family. I was very fortunate to be able to be in a bathroom when the shooting started. They were not as fortunate as I. They were standing on the dance floor, which is the first place the shooter made his way to.
You were in the bathroom, and did you hide in the bathroom until police arrived?
Not quite that long. The bathroom that I was in actually didn't have any stalls. It was all urinals. So there was about 10 or 12 of us at one point in the bathroom while the gunfire was going on near the dance floor. And we made the executive decision to make a run for a fire exit. There just happened to be one open around the corner. So again, just very fortunate.
Wow. And so it's my guess then that you're in favor after what you experienced and the significance of this site, of turning the former Pulse nightclub site into a national memorial. Is that right?
Yeah, you know, I think it resonates on a few levels. Obviously, for the LGBTQ community, Pulse is going to be something we talk about for the rest of time. This is the deadliest attack on the LGBTQ community in this country's history. And it's also important to remember that this is the deadliest terrorist attack on U.S. soil since 9/11. So this really resonates not just here in Orlando, not just here in Central Florida, but really across the world. As I've kind of traveled and listened to people's stories, it doesn't matter whether I'm in Los Angeles, whether I'm here in Orlando, whether I'm in New York City. When I start to talk about my experience at Pulse, people connect with that. It resonates with them. They talk about when they visited Pulse in Orlando. They talk about when they visit clubs with their friends. They talk about what they were doing that morning. So this really changed, how we look at things, not only in the LGBTQ community, but really across the world, and how we look at homophobia and hate violence. And so I think this is a really important step to memorialize those 49 victims and really to make a statement as a country that we are resilient and that hate won't win.
And this nightclub, Pulse, like so many other nightclubs that cater to LGBTQ Americans, was really cherished as sort of a safe space for your community. And the shattering of that by gunfire was just particularly fraught with sadness and horror. And, let me ask you as a follow-up. Governor DeSantis, in issuing a proclamation about the Pulse tragedy, initially neglected to mention LGBTQ Floridians. He later updated that. At the same time, the legislature has repeatedly failed to update non-discrimination laws to protect LGBT citizens from discrimination in jobs, public accommodations, and so forth. And so here in Florida, as you continue your activism around this issue, how would you rank Florida in terms of LGBT equality? And how far do you think the state needs to go?
Yeah, it's a good question. I actually was really proud of Governor DeSantis. Not only did he update his statement, the first statement he put out, the proclamation, was concerning, deeply concerning to me. I know that caught attention across the country. But he stated pretty unequivocally when he updated that statement that he was standing in solidarity with both the LGBTQ and Latinx communities. And then he arrived at Pulse, sort of unannounced. He gave a little bit of notice, but around 5 p.m. he arrived. I had the opportunity to speak with him briefly. And I shared with him that this is a really important step for the LGBTQ community to see their governor at Pulse on June 12th, paying his respects and promising and pledging to do right by our community. So I'm really proud of him. I hope that's the first step in a long relationship with the governor's office. You're right that legislators really haven't moved on the issue of LGBT civil rights in quite some time. But I think it's also important to note two things. The first one is that alongside Equality Florida, you know, we're a statewide LGBT advocacy group. We've actually passed local and county level human rights ordinances that cover about 70% of the state. So we've been doing that work on the ground, but the work to be done is to pass the Competitive Workforce Act, which would update civil rights protections to include LGBTQ folks, and really protect everyone, no matter where they are, from being discriminated against based on who they are. That piece of legislation this last session had 15 Republican co-sponsors, which means it has broad bipartisan support. Over 70% of Floridians believe that we need those protections for the LGBTQ community. And so my hope and my thought is that as we get into the next legislative session, Florida will actually turn the tide in the South. We'll kind of be a beacon of hope for everyone about what's possible in terms of protecting folks.
And if you're just tuning in, we're going to go to your calls now around Florida as we spend the full hour of this Friday lunch hour here on the Florida Roundup, looking at what's happened in the state 3 years after the Pulse tragedy in Orlando. It is Pride Month, and as we speak with Brandon Wolf of Equality Florida right now, we want your calls, 305-995-1800. Let's go to Michael in Pompano. Hey, Michael, you still with us? Good afternoon. Go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon. I guess the only thing I wanted to say was that memorials are more for tragedies of positive endeavors and not negative endeavors. And nobody's giving any thought to really the magnetic attraction to all the other idiots that are out there with guns or want to do harm and pick what out, whatever segment of groups they don't like, whether it's ethnic or gays or whatever. You memorialize something, the downside to that is it's another beacon that draws idiots to saying, hey, I can be famous, because people that do these kind of things aren't rational, aren't sane, and it's just another incentive for them to do that. We can memorialize the memory and prevent the enact legislation to protect and prevent, you know, future tragedies. But if we keep making memorials out of negative endeavors that really go to war and veterans and things like that, we're just giving a...
So, well, let me just ask you, Michael, should we not have a memorial, say, to those that died in Vietnam or, you know, World War II?
Vietnam is a positive endeavor. That's what I was just...
Well, I don't think everyone would agree with that. I don't think everyone would agree that Vietnam was a positive endeavor. So I guess my question is, you know, I appreciate your question, though. Let me get Brandon to react to that. Brandon, what about Michael's comments?
Yeah, you know, I hear you, and it's a fair question to ask. But I would say this. First of all, anyone who's not visited the interim memorial at Pulse should do that. When you get there, you will see that it actually isn't a memorial to, you know, kind of the horrible underbelly of what happened. It's really a memorial to what Orlando has become since Pulse. It's all about love wins. It's all about hate will not win. There's a lot of photos and sounds and images really of the aftermath of Pulse and how Orlando came together. There's a lot of love in that space, so I would encourage everyone to visit it. And I know that in looking at what the memorial should eventually look like, the One Pulse Foundation did a lot of visiting to folks like the Oklahoma City bombing memorial, the 9/11 memorial, the Holocaust memorial in Washington, D.C. Those are moments that we've memorialized, yes, something tragic that happened, but also as a reminder, A, of how resilient people are, right, and the strength in our unity, and also as a reminder to not let something like that happen again. I don't think we would argue that we should bulldoze the 9/11 memorial because it's memorializing terrorism, but rather let it stand as a sign that we are stronger when we're united.
And let me ask you as well, as you pointed out, more than 70% of Floridians support expanded civil rights protections for LGBTQ citizens in this state. At the same time, we've seen a backlash. A state representative from Pensacola was chastised for laughing about a suggestion that he should introduce a bill that would actually allow for the execution of LGBT people. There was, during Pride Month, anti-LGBT activists held a Make America Straight Again parade in Central Florida. So while in the main, as you've just pointed out, there is bipartisan widespread support for workplace and societal protections At the same time, there's been a really nasty backlash in Florida around these issues, and I'm just curious to get your thoughts about that.
Yeah, I think it's important to call out what you're talking about, and that is that there is a very small minority of people that are homophobic and bigoted and hateful. Representative Mike Hill is one of those people. He has a long documented Twitter history of being completely repulsive and vile in his commentary toward the LGBTQ community. So it was not surprising to me that he had this moment that was caught on audio tape. I know he tried to make it out to be, I think he called it a social media lynching. But as we started to dig through his previous comments, his homophobia is well documented. On the one hand, there is the right of LGBTQ people, specifically here in Florida, to worry about their safety, to wonder why our civil rights have not, risen to the same level as everyone else. And that's why we continue to have those conversations, and we continue to talk to legislators in Tallahassee about the importance of passing comprehensive non-discrimination policies here in Florida. But I also, I just come back to that 70% number. And, that mirrors a national poll that came out when I think it was Quinnipiac asked, is America ready for an LGBTQ president, an openly gay president? And 70% of Americans said yes, that they would feel comfortable with that. We have accomplished so much in such a short amount of time that I personally refuse to give oxygen to the very small, loud minority of homophobic people who are trying to distract us from the really great work that we're doing together.
And it is remarkable the quick pace of change that we've seen on this issue in a very short span of time, Brandon. The majority of Americans basically just changed their minds about this. Marriage equality is now the law of the land coast to coast. As you've said, large majorities of Americans are fine with that and all of the other prongs of your advocacy. Let me ask you quickly before the break, though. At the same time, you've been critical of the Trump administration's policies about LGBT people. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, well, we heard Make America Great Again, and I think a lot of people, especially in the LGBTQ community, get nervous about that because that sounds like Make America 1950 again. And these policies have reflected that, right? This is a Trump administration who sought to and succeeded in disallowing transgender folks to serve their country. This is a Trump administration who recently rolled back the Equal Access Rule and kicked transgender people out of homeless shelters. And it's also a Trump administration who tried to sell tacky t-shirts on the website LGBT for Trump in order to make a dime. So the Trump administration really is living in a different century. While America's moving forward, the Trump administration is continuously trying to move us backward. And so my answer to Donald Trump, who says he is the most pro-LGBT president that's ever been around, as he tends to do, he's self-aggrandizing. But what I would say to him is, if you're transphobic, you're not an ally. If you're transphobic, you're not pro-LGBTQ, because transgender people are part of the beautiful umbrella of the LGBTQ community, and they deserve absolutely the same amount of respect and dignity as everyone else.
And as we continue talking with Brandon Wolf of Equality Florida, a survivor of the nightclub shootings 3 years ago at Pulse in Orlando, we're spending the full hour this Friday on the Florida Roundup marking the 3-year anniversary of that tragedy, efforts to make that site a memorial, and a whole lot more. A quick break, and in a moment, we're going to go to your calls and tweets about all of the issues raised here on the show, including a renewed push to ban assault weapons in Florida. What do you think about that? Give us a call. The number to join the show is 305-995-1800. And your tweets, too, at Florida Roundup. In just a moment, you're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. My co-host, Tom Hudson, is out this week. And for the full hour this Friday, we're talking about gun control and LGBTQ rights in Florida, 3 years after the shooting at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando. Brandon Wolf of Equality Florida is still with us, and in a moment we'll also speak with reporter Amy Green of WMFE in Orlando. And you can call in and join our conversation, too. It's 305-995-1800 and on Twitter at Florida Roundup. Your calls and tweets in a moment. But first, Tampa Mayor Jane Castor made history when she was elected earlier this year, becoming the first LGBTQ woman to lead a major city in the Southeast. Castor is also a former police chief, and she's got a lot to say about the issue of gun violence in Florida. I spoke with her earlier today. Let's listen. Mayor Jane Castor, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Lots to talk about, beginning with your perspective on the issue of gun violence. Let me ask you about that first off. You're a former police chief, now mayor of Tampa, and you've said before you have seen a lot of victims of gun violence in your prior career as a police officer. What do you think about the push in Florida right now, a citizens' initiative to ban assault weapons, as we talk about these issues of gun violence and LGBTQ equality in Florida 3 years after the Pulse tragedy?
Well, I, as you stated, I've been in law enforcement for 31 years, and I've seen what damage assault rifles can do. And I think that there is a way to limit public access to assault rifles, and that it's amenable to everyone. There really is no need for ownership of an assault rifle. They're not used for hunting. And, you know, the majority of the use would be in the military or in specific instances within the law enforcement. So I am I'm in favor of that.
What's your response to those who've opposed you on Second Amendment grounds?
Well, I don't, you know, this doesn't infringe on the Second Amendment. Nobody, I'm a firearm owner. I have no issue with any citizen owning firearms, but I believe, as do the vast majority of our citizens here in Florida, that we can have responsible firearm regulations and not infringe on anyone's Second Amendment.
And it's becoming more difficult to get ballot amendments before the voters. The people behind this citizens initiative say they are collecting even more than the signatures needed to clear the hurdles that they will have to face. What's your thought about that, that getting such an initiative placed on the ballot, whether it has to do with assault weapons or anything else, is going to get tougher in the state of Florida?
Well, I don't I certainly don't support increasing the percentage necessary to get any citizen-led amendment onto the ballot. I felt that the processes that were in place prior to were stringent enough to ensure that we weren't amending our Constitution, you know, in a frivolous manner. But, you know, citizens have the right to amend the Constitution when it is a vast majority that are in favor of that. So I feel that, that the new regulations weren't necessary.
Let me ask you as a follow-up. Of course, you made national history as the first LGBTQ mayor, female mayor, in the Southeast, becoming mayor of Tampa. 3 years after Pulse, there's a continuing push in the state legislature to put into place statewide workplace protections for LGBTQ people. It has faced an uphill fight in the legislature. June is Pride Month, and as the LGBTQ community in Florida celebrates, at the same time, there are members of the legislature who have been censured for calling for the execution of LGBT people. And so full equality is still a ways off, I think it's fair to say, in the state of Florida. You sit at the intersection of a lot of these issues. So how do you see the push for LGBT equality in Florida playing out over the next few years?
Well, I'm very hopeful that, you know, our legislators will see the need for equal protection for all of our citizens. And, you know, whether it pertains to right to work or work environment or on the personal level as well, every one of our citizens should be valued equally.
How do you see your election as really smashing a barrier that existed not just for women, but also for LGBTQ Americans?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's is very interesting when it gained national attention, and after the election, when the media from across the nation would call, that was the first thing that they wanted to know is how the LGBT issue played in the election. When I told them it was never brought up, there was, you know, sort of went radio silent. Mm-hmm. But I feel that that was a great commentary, very positive commentary on our city here in Tampa, that the issue was not that I was gay, but the fact that I had the skill, knowledge, and experience to get the job done, and that I was focused on the issues that mattered to our citizens. And I am hopeful that the what played out here in Tampa will occur across the nation, that individuals are being judged on their ability to get the job done and not on their inclusion or exclusion from particular groups. But and as I've said, too, you know, I was the first female police chief here in this city, and at the swearing in, I said at the end of my tenure, I didn't want to be remembered as the first female. I wanted to be remembered as a good chief. And the same thing applies to the position of mayor. I don't want to be remembered as the first LGBT mayor. I want to be remembered as a good mayor. However, with that said, the responsibility of being the first is certainly not lost on me. And I work hard every day to be a positive role model and a positive example for not only for our community here in Tampa, but for the nation.
Well, Tampa Mayor Jane Castor, we appreciate your thoughts. Thanks for appearing on the Florida Roundup.
Thank you very much. You have a great day.
All right, Amy Green now with us from WMFE in Orlando. Amy, interesting to hear those reflections from Mayor Castor over in Tampa, both about LGBT issues and the issue of guns and assault weapons in the state of Florida. Let's talk about the latter for a moment. This citizens' initiative to ban assault weapons in the state, two groups, Ban Assault Weapons Now and the League of Women Voters of Florida. They were accompanied by relatives of those killed in the Pulse nightclub shootings and the Parkland High School massacre when they submitted more petition signatures earlier this week. Take us through this process that these groups are undergoing now in efforts to get this before the voters as a ballot initiative in 2020, if you could.
Right, sure. So as you said, the groups submitted more signatures this week at the Orange County Supervisor of Elections office. They announced that they have collected more than 100,000 signatures to date, and that is enough signatures at this point to trigger a state Supreme Court review of the constitutionality of the ballot initiative. This initiative, it's for a state constitutional amendment that would ban assault weapons in the state of Florida. That would include semi-automatic rifles like what was used in the Pulse nightclub shooting, and also shotguns that can hold more than 10 rounds of ammunition.
And let's be clear, because the governor recently signed a measure that would make these types of citizen-driven petitions more difficult. Much more signatures are going to be needed going forward. Does this apply retroactively to this initiative or not?
Right. So, yeah, so this particular ballot initiative would be among the first that would be affected by this law that Governor DeSantis just signed into law last week. And as you said, it makes these ballot initiative efforts more difficult. Among the things, those collecting petitions have to have a Florida address and register with the state, and that addresses a concern that some of these ballot initiatives are out-of-state efforts. Another thing that this particular ballot initiative will be facing is potential fines of $50 to $250 for petitions submitted 30 days after signed. And so what we're seeing here is, you know, often these groups that initiate these ballot initiatives do so because they feel like they're not getting anywhere in the state legislature. They're not getting anywhere the traditional way with state lawmakers. And so a lot of times these groups decide to take these issues directly to voters as ballot initiatives. And we often see that when that happens, the legislature doesn't like that. And we saw mm-hmm. that just, for example, with Amendment 1, the Land and Water Conservation Amendment, that lawmakers have implemented in ways that environmental groups have criticized.
Right. Let's go to some calls now here on the Florida Roundup as we mark the 3-year anniversary of Pulse. We're talking about LGBTQ rights, gun issues on the show today, and lots of calls and tweets. Mary is on the line from Orlando. Hi, Mary. Thanks for holding. You're on the air. Go ahead. Mary, are you still with us? Okay. Give us a call back. Lots of other calls to get to. Sydney is in Sanford, just outside of Orlando. Hey, Sydney, how are you this Friday?
Hello. How are you doing?
Okay. Go ahead.
Well, I visited the memorial site for the first time a couple of weeks ago. It was right before the anniversary of the tragedy. And I was just taken by the outpouring of love from the community. And I feel like it's important to go ahead and memorialize the site, either federally or at least on the state level, just because you never know what's going to happen sometime in the future if the property changes hands. And I think it's just a huge testament for our community that that much love poured out to try and overcome, you know, the hate that took place on that night. And mostly I just wanted to speak in favor of that.
All right, Sydney, thanks for that. Brandon Wolf of Equality Florida. Thank you, Sydney. Brandon, you know, earlier we heard Congressman Darren Soto say that even though technically federal funding would be sought for a Pulse Memorial site, it would largely be paid for through local or state funds and managed locally. It's, as you said, there's already a makeshift memorial there. And so, you know, tell us a little bit more about what it would take, the logistics to make this a memorial, what it might look like, what advocates want it to look like, how it would be run and managed, all of those questions.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions. And I know that the community, you know, this has kind of been a conversation that's happening here in Central Florida. There's folks on different sides of the aisle that would like to see different things done with it. But basically, logistically, it's a huge undertaking. And when you ask the One Pulse Foundation, you know, what is this going to take? They start with a figure around $50 million. This project includes, from my understanding, a memorial where the Pulse site is today. Down the street, there's some sort of a museum structure that they're looking at. And then there's some sort of a survivor's walk, which is the distance between Pulse and the hospital. And from what I've heard or understand from the One Pulse Foundation, they're really looking at revitalizing that area of town and using it as sort of a Pulse district, right? And I think that's very symbolic. I think it, you know, it matters a lot because the aftermath of Pulse in Central Florida and Orlando was one of love and unity, alliances that maybe weren't there before. And so, you know, from my understanding, that's what this site will come to represent. You know, you asked about how will it look and how will advocates be involved in that and how will the community be involved? That's a really good question. I think, you know, some of the processes around jury selection, I know that there will be public commentary allowed on the 6 designs that will be submitted for the eventual memorial. My encouragement and my hope is that the process will be as transparent as possible.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And you're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Let's go to Daniel in Merritt Island. Hi, Daniel. Thanks for your call this Friday. Go ahead.
Hey, I was just calling, listening to everybody talking. And it's just, to me, it seems so hypocritical when you have people talking about getting their rights as an LGBTQ citizen, and then in the same breath, taking away the rights of other citizens, you know, in the Second Amendment. People can say that, you know, assault weapons and things aren't part of the Second Amendment, but they are. And in the, you know, when you say, hey, I'm going to take away the rights of one person, but we want rights for other people, to me, it's just so hypocritical. It just makes me not even want to listen.
Daniel, thanks for the call. Amy Green of WMFE. Daniel's comments speak to the difficulty of this issue in Florida. What about his feeling that it's hypocritical for LGBT citizens to talk about their rights when strong supporters of the Second Amendment feel their rights are being infringed with a ballot initiative like the one that's moving through right now?
Well, I appreciate the caller's comment. He raises an interesting comment. The political action committee behind this ballot initiative, it's called Ban Assault Weapons Now, or BAWN, and they characterize their effort as one that falls within the Second Amendment, which, of course, allows for the regulation of gun ownership and weapon ownership. The group points out the ruling by Justice Antonin Scalia, who said that the right to bear arms is not without limits. And just for instance, we can't own a rocket launcher or a tank or fully automatic weapons.
And so it comes down to, Brandon, different interpretations of the Second Amendment, quite frankly, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it could. But I think Justice Scalia, although I don't, you know, tend to agree with many of his opinions, I do agree with that one, that, you know, the Second Amendment is not unlimited. There's a reason that fully automatic weapons are heavily regulated in this country. There's a reason that you, you know, as Amy said, can't go and buy a rocket launcher or a tank. You know, or a nuclear missile. Those things are already heavily regulated. This is just another conversation that we have to have in today's landscape. Should citizens be able to own and operate, you know, weaponry that is intended for military purposes?
But, you know, I think one of the reasons why, the main reason why we're spending the full hour on Pulse, and this, I'm directing this to both of you, is the Pulse tragedy is at the intersection of these deep flashpoint issues in American society. There are so many tangents to this conversation. And so, you know, Amy, before we get to the break, this is something I know you've been covering in Orlando for some time. This really gets at the heart of divisions in America in so many ways.
Yeah, that's right. This ballot initiative, it certainly has the potential to motivate individuals on both sides of the issue. The political action committee behind it, they say that already they have raised nearly $1 million in funds in support of their effort. The next steps on this for them is they now have raised just over 100,000, or excuse me, they've collected just over 100,000 signatures.
Yeah,
and they'll need to raise a few more by February of 2020 to get on the ballot.
To get it on the ballot. More discussion in a moment here on the Florida Roundup. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. My co-host Tom Hudson is out this week. And as we continue our conversation about gun control and LGBTQ rights, 3 years after the shooting at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando, we'll get back in a moment to Brandon Wolf of Equality Florida and reporter Amy Green at WMFE in Orlando. But first, a few more calls. Calls coming into the show from across Florida this Friday. Daniel is in Gainesville right now. Hey, Daniel. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I am. I've lived here my whole life, you know, 39 years. I've seen the gun violence. I've seen it time and time again. And I think we've proven that we are not capable of having these guns. I am 100% pro canceling the use of these guns in the public. I would also like to make the point that...
Do you mean assault weapons particularly?
Assault weapons and the right to bear arms is one thing, but you know, the Second Amendment is outdated. I would point to the fact that we have a well-established militia, and that is the National Guard. You know, these things need to be updated for our time, and I am against assault rifles 100%.
All right, Daniel, thanks for that call. Jeff is down in Cocoa Beach. Hi, Jeff. Thanks for holding. Go ahead with your thoughts.
Thank you very much. I want to add my commentary to the assault weapon ban. I'm a retired police officer, and I've seen plenty of what that kind of weaponry can do, and I think it's overdue time to rein that in. But I want to talk about the memorial itself. I'm the proud father of a son who has recently come out as gay, and I have concerns for, you know, the way that society is going to accept him in the future, and I worry, being in Central Florida, that this is somehow becoming a bit distasteful. And I want to say what I mean by that, and that we take on almost a theme park sort of mentality, and somehow it's become a method of generating revenue for almost like tragedy tourism.
Instead you're worried that this memorial would be Disneyfied somehow, I guess? Is that kind of what you're...
Yes, I think it needs to be a respectful... We need to find some way of making sure that this doesn't get away from us and we don't turn half of downtown Orlando into somehow, a method of generating tourism. Instead, we have something that is a respectful, contemplative place to remember those lives and to remember... honor their memory and honor their sacrifice. Rather than what seems to be just sort of over the top. And I worry about people really with an eye towards generating revenue instead of honoring them.
Okay,
that's all.
Thank you, Jeff. That's Jeff in Cocoa. So Brandon Wolf, concerns about the tastefulness and the presentation and the mission of this memorial. What about those concerns?
Yeah, well, I think the comments are totally warranted. I absolutely agree. I think this memorial needs to be reflective of our community. It needs to be reflective and reverent to what happened that night. I often say, we can't just embrace all of the happy things that have come since Pulse, because we need to remember the gravity of what truly happened that day. So I would echo his sentiments. I think it needs to be reverent. It needs to be respectful. It needs to be a place that people can go to mourn. It needs to be respectful to the family members who lost someone, the survivors who were there that night. And I think the way to accomplish that is a transparent process that involves all community voices and has plenty of representation in what the final outcome looks like.
Lots of tweets, meanwhile, coming into the Florida Roundup. Martina tweets the show, wouldn't ERA ratification by Florida, the Equal Rights Amendment, wouldn't that serve LGBT, people of color and women equally? It's very important, she says. Here's a tweet from William. Wasn't the reason Rubio gave for reentering the Senate race because of Pulse? Well, we'll talk about that in a moment, William. But first, let's go to a few more calls. Tim is in Spring Hill. Hey, Tim, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just want to comment that, I heard the gentleman earlier say how it seemed to be hypocritical that as gay people we want equal rights and equal protection, but what about his Second Amendment right? My question to that gentleman and to anybody else is, what about my right as a gay person to love the person I want to love, freely go out in public, and not be fearful of somebody taking their Second Right Amendment, buying a gun and coming out to a crowded nightclub or a school and just murdering people they don't know for no apparent reason?
Tim, thanks for that. And, Amy Green, as Brandon pointed out at the top of the hour, the attack at Pulse was the worst attack in American history on LGBTQ people. And until another mass shooting that happened shortly afterwards, it was the worst mass shooting in the nation's history. And so... There's just still very deep, deep sadness in Florida and around the nation as we talk about these issues. What about Tim's comments?
Oh, well, sure. That's exactly the kind of thing that the group, the Political Action Committee that's behind this effort is that's what this is about. The group says that for the first time, this ballot initiative, this proposed constitutional amendment would give Floridians a say in the kinds of weapons we have in our state. Again, certainly this issue is poised to motivate individuals on both sides of the issue. Representative Carlos Guerrero Smith has sponsored similar legislation in each of the past three legislative sessions, and each year the measure has failed to get a hearing.
Failed to get a hearing. Let's get a few more calls in, and then we'll continue that point. James is in Orlando. He's been on hold for a while. Hi, James. Thanks for holding. You're on the radio.
Thank you. Real quick, so the problem with problems is making sure you're solving the correct problem. So in the United States, the gun laws don't work because we're a multitude of states whose borders are open. So no matter what individual state passes a law, another state may do something different, which makes gun access always available. Secondly, the word assault rifle gets used as a generic or assault-style weapon. It's just like the problem. Words matter. Legal words matter. So the problem is, for instance, an AR-15 is not a rifle. It's a pistol. It's a long-barrel pistol, not a short-barreled rifle. And when you buy an AR-15, all you're actually buying is the grip and the trigger mechanism. You're not buying a bolt. You're not buying a barrel. And what the company sells is only the grip and the trigger mechanism. Is that is classified as a pistol. So you can ban AK-47s and automatic actual rifles all you want. But the problem is people who don't own guns and gun enthusiasts, as well as politicians who vote and write these laws, are totally ignorant of gun classification, which is where one of the problems stems from. And then the other problems as presented previously is terms like well-regulated militia. We already have a militia, the National Guard. Or if someone wants to start a militia, then they're more power to them. Become federally registered, register all your weapons, etc. But this is the root
James.
Of the problem.
So I hear you making two points. One, the issue of transporting weapons across state lines, and two, ignorance of the specifics of how guns are manufactured. So thank you for both of those points. Let me remind everyone you're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Brandon Wolf of Equality Florida, we're almost out of time, but can you respond to his comments real quickly, particularly his comment about he believes it would be ineffective to pass an assault weapons ban in Florida since people can transport weapons around the country?
Yeah, you know, it's a fair concern. I think the people of Chicago would echo that sentiment because they're frequently used as a talking point by Second Amendment enthusiasts who say, oh, look, Chicago has really strong gun laws, but they have, some pretty horrific gun violence numbers. And the reality of that is because people are transporting those firearms from Indiana. And so I think it's a fair concern, but I appreciate the work of Ban Assault Weapons Now for giving that choice to Floridians. I think the root problem here, as he said, to get to the root problem, is that the Florida legislature isn't doing anything on these issues. They're very stagnant. People feel like they're not being heard. So this is giving an opportunity for Floridians to have their voices heard, and I totally support that.
And Amy Green, almost out of time, but... this is by far from the first time the citizens have mobilized in this manner to try to go around the legislature. We'll have to watch the next steps. You'll continue to cover it. Give us a look at the road ahead for this legislation potential,
right,
or so, this potential ballot initiative, I should say.
Right. So this ballot initiative, it'll undergo a review by the state Supreme Court, which will decide whether the ballot language is constitutional. And I just would go back to that last caller. Lots of valuable information in there about weapons and guns and so forth. This particular language would ban assault weapons, and the language itself describes that or defines that as including semi-automatic rifles and shotguns that can hold more than 10 rounds of ammunition. People who already legally owned assault-style weapons before the ban would take place would be required to register them with the state.
So it does provide for some specificity, Amy, then, doesn't it, in terms of exactly what would be banned in Florida?
Yeah, again, lots of good information there that the last caller provided. That's what this particular ballot initiative language says.
Okay, well, thank you both so much for being with us for the full hour this Friday on the Florida Roundup, discussing an emotional anniversary in the state of Florida, 3 years since the tragedy at the Pulse nightclub. Brandon Wolf of Equality Florida with us, and reporter Amy Green of WMFE in Orlando. Thanks to you both for being on the show this Friday. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And that is our show. Thanks to everyone who called in this hour and everyone who tweeted. We also want to thank Congressman Darren Soto and Tampa Mayor Jane Castor for being on the show. The Florida Roundup is produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Heather Schatz and Denise Royal are producers. Jason Zabka is the WLRN Director of Radio Programming and Technical Director. Director of Radio Operations is Peter Mertz. And theme music provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks so much for calling, tweeting, and listening. We'll be back next Friday at noon. Have a great weekend, everybody.